Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 9th, 2016, and episode number 252. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Can't believe it's February already. Well, year is moving fast. And what's going on this week? Well, this week's news includes Bigfoot to help kids with cancer move over cougars. Here comes the boss. That's going to be an interesting story. Mythological creature seen on the slopes in Spain. MUFON sighting statistics for January. A psychic walks after milking a man for over $500,000. Edgar Mitchell's paranormal past. And a man killed by a meteorite. And we'll also have the book of the week. And some other updates to other things going on all around us. So, that being said, this week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum, located in Portland, Maine, which is the world's only cryptozoology museum. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Visit the International Cryptozoology Museum at 11 Avon Street in downtown Portland, Maine. And for more information, please visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. And as I've been talking about off and on for, two or three months now, they're in the process of getting ready to move, moving to a larger location down by the ocean, down by the water there, and it's going to be their third and hopefully their last move, and they need your help. They need some financial assistance for that particular move, and I'll post that in the chat room there, and it's a GoFundMe site, and you can find that at gofundme.com/ICM-Africa if you want to help out. And the cool thing about that is I donated $50 a couple months ago, and I got a cool email from Lauren Coleman and got to choose what kind of t-shirt I wanted and what did I get. I got bumper stickers, I got all kinds of cool stuff, and got some casts of different animals that I wanted to get. So you can, by giving, you're going to get back. So it's almost like you're buying a cast. I got a ring pendant is what I got. I chose out of three choices for a cast. I already have a couple Bigfoot ones, so I don't need them. But you can get some cool stuff in return. You're almost just paying for the stuff to get shipped to you, but you're being a part of history. So check that out, gofundme.com/ICM-Africa to help out the International Cryptozoology Museum. And speaking of cryptozoology, Bigfoot, it seems like it's a lot of stuff is happening for me in this arena. I talked to last week about May 6th through the 8th. I will be speaking at the 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure with host Eric Altman. And I'll be one of three speakers. And the other two speakers are Steve Coles of Squatch Detective Radio and Stan Gordon, an awesome researcher and investigator. Has been around a long time, has been an inspiration to me as I've gone through my journey of learning about different areas of anomalous research, UFOs, cryptozoology, and even ghosts. He's a very knowledgeable guy, and I'm really excited to work with him. And I got to meet him last year at an event, the Butler Paranormal Conference last year. I had a table. I couldn't get in there as a speaker, but I got a table, sold some books, made some friends, and got to meet a few people that I haven't seen in a couple of years. So it was a good time, and that event is going on again this year on April 16th in Butler, Pennsylvania, and this time I'll be speaking at that event. So it's going to be a little bit more fun. I get to get up there on stage and talk about cryptozoology. That's right. I've chosen cryptozoology over all the other things that I'm doing because it's the hot thing this year for me, because in May, obviously, I'll be at the Bigfoot Camping Adventure on May 6th to the 8th, and then May 12th, I'll be at the Westerville Public Library which is just northeast of Columbus, Ohio. And again, speaking on cryptozoology, and it'll be a little different program there than what I do at the other two events. Obviously, I'll have hopefully some evidence to show at that library event on May 12th. We'll see, hopefully. Maybe some audio. We never know. Looking forward to that Bigfoot camping adventure. I went to a similar thing in, I believe, 2013 and had an awesome time with that as well. So, again, I'll be speaking at the 9th Annual Butler Paranormal Conference in Butler, Pennsylvania on April 16th. And I've already posted that on my Facebook feed, I believe. If not, I will within the next couple of days and get that out. They don't really have a website, I don't think, but I do have the Facebook thing here. I'll throw that in the chat room so you guys can check that out and click on that. It gives you all the information you'll need to find the location. And I'll obviously be talking about this a lot more. So if you're interested in it, hang tight. I'll be talking about it in the weeks to come. Now, Sunday, if you were around Sunday evening, there was a big thing going on. It was 3 hours of commercials, if you tuned into that. And there was a football game, I guess, intermingled with that as well. The Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers. Now, you know me, I'm always thinking. And I was thinking while watching this game, and this has bothered me for years, because studying animals and studying cryptozoology, I know that about panthers and things. And the logo of the Carolina Panthers is a black panther on the side of their helmet. There's no such thing as a melanistic cougar, which also goes by panther, puma, and a couple of other names. But a panther is also the generic umbrella name for jaguars and leopards. And black panthers are also known as the melanistic version of any of the panthera species. And in Asia and Europe, this would be leopards. And in the Americas, North and South America, would be jaguars. Well, the problem with all this is that there's another team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, which to me is confusing. It's essentially the same team, two different names, two different color schemes. But again, it's kind of the same thing. I know that's petty and it's weird to talk about that. But that's what I think of when I'm watching the Super Bowl. Am I allowed to say Super Bowl? Big game, I guess it was. And technically, Florida is home to the Florida Panther, which is actually a cougar, a puma, more specifically. And Florida was also once home to jaguars. And as we'll find out in just a couple of minutes, yes, they still roam the United States. And for a little bit more interesting history here, both of those teams came into the NFL as expansion teams in 1995. And the following year here in Cleveland was not a pretty one, as our beloved Cleveland Browns left for Baltimore. And we were without a team for a couple of years. That was a hard time. Well, we still don't have a team. I guess anybody out there that likes the Cleveland Browns, you know darn well we don't have a team right now. So anyway, got the NFL news out of the way. And now we're going to jump into cryptid news. And kind of a similar thing. This is a kind of a conference convention type thing, but I wanted to put this in the news because it's a great thing here that these guys are doing. And it's along the same lines as the Pennsylvania Bigfoot camping adventure with Eric Altman as the host. We're doing a benefit for that as well. He's gathering books, DVDs, posters, all kinds of things signed by different people in the field, and we'll be raffling those things off for two charities for that event. And another couple of groups of guys are doing a similar thing. The Kentucky Bigfoot Research Organization and the Crypto Crew are hosting a Bigfoot event that will benefit kids with cancer on Saturday, February 20th in Jenkins, Kentucky. Charlie Raymond and Thomas Markham, respectively of the aforementioned groups, Kentucky Bigfoot Research Organization and Crypto Crew, will be speaking, showing off some evidence, and having a good time while raising money for children with cancer. The event is actually free. Yes, free. It's hard to find events like that that are free. There's a couple. There's one in West Virginia, too, I believe, coming up. And donations will obviously be taken at the event to help these kids. And for more information, you can check out thecryptocrew.com or find the Facebook link on the Paranormal News Insider Facebook and Twitter feeds, which I put it on there, I want to say, over the weekend, last weekend. And now, a follow-up to a story that I covered last week about the 16-year-old kid who found large cat-like prints in Waiea, South New South Wales in Australia. Now, he feels this could be a Black Panther. Here we go with the Black Panther. We're going to hear a lot about cats, and then we're going to follow up towards the end of the show. We're talking a lot about meteorites. It's going to be a weird show. It's going to be like that. It's like that every week, I guess. Now, Jack feels that this is, again, a Black Panther because there's been several reports in various parts of Australia that people have described seeing a large black cat. Even though, again, I just gave you a little history lesson on there's no black cougars. But there could be other cats that are on the loose in the area. Now, another print has surfaced in the media that is actually a little bit larger than what Jack's print is. Now, the woman who found the print is a former zoo employee and currently an animal breeder. She found the print and made a cast back in 1992 after investigating the area the morning after a horse was startled and the sounds of a large cat were heard. The woman's husband estimates the cat to be around 240 to 260 pounds. That's pretty big, right? Well, male cougars are known to get as heavy as 220 pounds. Well, so that rules him out. The Sumatran tiger, the smallest subspecies of tiger, weighs between 220 to 310 pounds. Lions weigh on average around 420 pounds, and while the lion is the king of the jungle, the Siberian tiger can weigh from 400 to 675 pounds. So what kind of cat is represented in the print? Well, no one knows. But in my opinion, the print shown by the woman is not a feline print, but almost looks like canine to me. She points out that there are claws on the print. While cats have retractable claws, it's not completely out of the ordinary to find prints with their claws partially exposed. However, it's still not likely. Now, there are a couple of cats that cannot retract their claws. And if I remember, I'll dig that information up at the end of the show with the book of the week that deals with this very subject. Dogs, on the other hand, cannot retract their claws at all. It is possible for a dog to leave a large print. In the right conditions, even a regular-sized dog print can be magnified, especially in muddy conditions or in even snow, but I don't think it's snow down there in that area. Now, the cast is questionable from the photograph, as the top pads look feline to me and the bottom pad looks more canine than feline, but it's really hard to tell in a photograph. And it's really hard to tell when somebody makes a cast, makes a print, you know, a copy of a print in the ground, and there's no other photographs, or there's only one print to go on. And sometimes it's kind of hard to really gather that information just from a photograph, looking at it on a news web page. But, you know, if they feel it's a feline, then obviously they've done the work, and they're used to animals, so can't really doubt their perspective on that. But to me, it looks a little confusing. Now, on the topic of large cats, I mentioned this with the Super Bowl story here. The video has surfaced on February 4th of the first footage, the only known jaguar in the United States. Now, we're not talking cars here. We're talking big cats. And you've probably seen the video. It's pretty cool. El Jefe, as he's called, well, that's the boss to those of you who do not speak Spanish, was filmed in his home area of the Santa Rita Mountains outside of Tucson, Arizona. This particular jaguar has been monitored for over 3 years and is estimated to be about 7 years old. It is only one of four or five jaguars that have been documented in the United States in the last 20 years. Now, the reason for the footage being released is to spread awareness of the attempted comeback of this once native animal, well, I guess it's still native, and that the area where El Jefe lives is being threatened. A Canadian mining company is pushing to develop a complex in that area that would most certainly threaten its range and would also threaten the potential recovery of jaguars in the United States. Conservationists are also using the video project to monitor for jaguar activity and will hopefully use this data to help block the development from moving ahead and hindering this endangered species recovery. Jaguars are the third largest cats in the world next to tigers and lions and are the largest cat in the Americas and are descendants of Asian cats. And this area of Tucson, Arizona, it's pretty far south in Arizona. So, you know, there's concern about if they are to develop along the wall down there to keep Mexicans from illegally crossing the border. If a certain president is brought in, or a potential president is brought in, he plans to completely make that area impossible to go through, and that would completely cut off these large cats. Would probably be the end of them here in the United States, because they are able to travel through a mountain range down there in and out of Arizona all the time. That's why there's only one. He's probably leaving the area to go do what jaguars do and come back to the area. But hopefully that area stays open and these animals are able to come and go as they please, and hopefully eventually get a foothold back here in the United States. They're beautiful animals. They're not really a danger to people, even though they are large cats. You know, we have a lot of those running around anyway here in the eastern United States, as well as the western United States, with the puma, which has attacked quite a few people. But you know what? You can't jog in mountains and expect animals not to be animals. And let me throw that. Yes, Dita, you are correct. A cheetah. That's exactly what I was thinking. Cheetahs. They cannot retract their claws, which is weird. I learned that a long time ago, and I thought, well, that's kind of odd. This goes against what I learned about animals. You know, felines can't retract their claws, but they use them as they're running. It's just kind of a safety device since they run so fast, so they can move on the run, so they can catch their little meals on wheels. So I don't know if I want to call this the most ridiculous story of the week. It started out as ridiculous, and then the more I did research for this, the more I was really kind of surprised by some of the history behind this particular sighting. It's still a joke, but it's kind of a semi-viral story. And this comes from Spain. It involves skiing and also includes the Yeti. Well, not exactly the Yeti, but that's what the story says. Now, is the Yeti taking a skiing vacation in Spain? Well, maybe, but probably not. It's kind of a weird story. And the picture popped up on social media a few days ago. And I'm pretty sure that this is just a person with a Yeti costume. Yeti costumes are pretty easy to get. If you do a quick Google search, a whole bunch of them pop up. And really didn't spend too much time trying to disseminate which one it could be in the particular photograph. I'm pretty convinced that it's not really what it's made out to be. Now, a photograph and video of this hulking beast, and the video is like 3 seconds long, so it's nothing really major. This is the white version of a Yeti, which is actually not really consistent with sightings, but, you know, we'll just go with that. This photograph and video turned up from a ski resort, the Formigal ski resort in the Pyrenees Mountains in northeastern Spain, which is actually just south of the border with France, if you're creating an image in your mind. The video is only a couple of seconds long, like I said, and shows a strange white-shaped creature. And the photograph shows a white-covered bipedal person, and I say person because it appears to me to be a person in a costume that is it's kind of molded around the body. And the one picture, there's two pictures. And the one picture looks like the left leg is a little baggy, like the person's moving and the costume is just trying to catch up. The photograph showed up on a message board and was tweeted throughout the Twitterverse and was picked up on other forms of social media. Now, it started out, like I said, on a message board. And it's spread like wildfire, as some of these stories usually do. The person behind the photograph said that they were in contact with those at the resort and that they were not taking the story seriously. Well, representatives at the resort did say they were talking to the witness and were searching for this creature or signs thereof. There were no details on if they found prints or any other evidence of a cryptid creature or of a fraudulent attempt at creating a Yeti. I don't know if that's a crime in Spain. It should be a crime everywhere, especially for that poor guy that got here in the United States and killed wearing a costume. Spain is known for very little in the cryptid world. There is a couple that I know off the top of my head. The Gnome of Girona, which is it's actually just a fetus of some sort that was found in the city of Girona in 1989, but was reported to be some sort of unknown humanoid creature. It's kind of weird looking if you see a drawing or picture of it. It's a little creepy. Now, Spain is also known for a series of large bird sightings back in 1990. But one legend of a large bipedal creature in the Pyrenees Mountains does exist. Now, the Yeti is the Himalayan mountain version of Bigfoot, Sasquatch. Yeren, Yeti, whatever you want to call them. That's the Himalayan version. And that area from the Pyrenees Mountains is about 5,000 miles away from these Spanish sightings. Now, there is a creature known as Basahaun. Basahaun, spelled B-A-S-A-J-A-U-N, if you're doing any research out there. It is one of the main creatures in Basque mythology. Its name is translated loosely to Lord of the Forest, and is depicted as a large, hairy, human-like creature that lives in caves in the Pyrenees Mountains, the same area where this recent sighting occurred. But it's strange to me, because none of the stories I read had anything to do with this Basahaun creature, which is weird because it's mythology, it's folklore in that area. It's considered to be really a personification of a wood spirit. It is not thought of an actual creature that roams the mountains. But one of the problems with that is between the 4th and 12th century AD, most of the Basque mythology was destroyed by Christianity that invaded and basically told people how to think and act and feel and everything else. Imagine that, religion ruining things. Anyway, I'm not going to go down there tonight. But so a lot of mythology was destroyed by new culture coming in, and there are stories that have been passed down, and you know, an attempt to kind of put the pieces back together of this long-standing, very old culture. Now, some historians that have studied Basque mythology feel that the story of Basahaun and his female version of Bessendir may have been created in much earlier times, much earlier than 4th century AD, and they think that it could actually be a Neanderthal, that it may have started, have been the root of this actual myth. But with history, I should say, destroyed, all we have to go on is what is happening on the ski slopes in Spain. I'm pretty sure that this is just a prank, but, you know, you have to keep an open mind to this. You know, I want to believe that there's something running around up there on the mountaintops other than drunk ears and whoever else is up there in costumes, but you never know. And keep an eye on the story to see if anybody is caught doing this stuff or not. And if you want to check out some of the Basque mythology, throw that little link there in the chat room. And one of my favorite things is the MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, sighting statistics. It was usually delivered directly to my mail, but lately it's been a little hard to come by. But I have found a little network that I have through Colorado MUFON, and they let me know when they post those. So I'm able to bring that to you again this month. I thought last month, in January, that was probably going to be the last time I talk about the sighting statistics. It's an interesting thing to look at. It's not really science or scientific, but it kind of gives you a gauge as to what's going on out there in the UFO world. So in the UFO news, I will present the Mutual UFO Network sighting statistics for January of 2016. Now, 2015 was an interesting year because they had a major spike in the middle of the year in June. December ended the year with the second lowest monthly total of the year, with 624 worldwide reports. And 2015 peaked out with June with 1,402 total sightings, the most in MUFON history. And looking back at January 2015, there was 721 worldwide reports. And again, 624 in December. So what did January bring us? Well, it went up a little bit from December, down a little bit from January of 2015, with 687 worldwide reports, with the United States turning in 502. Canada was second with 66 sightings, followed by the United Kingdom with 28. Australia had 13, and no other country posted 10 or more. Now, obviously, MUFON is based here in the United States, so a majority of these sightings are based in the United States. Other countries have their own reporting centers, and many people in other countries don't even know about MUFON. and a lot of other countries have their own independent research organizations that take these kind of cases, and other people just maybe are afraid to actually report them. But hopefully MUFON will grow, and people will continue to, around the world, will continue to submit their reports to them. Now, as far as here in the United States, looking at the individual states, California once again took the top spot, as always, because it has the largest population, with 65 of the 502 U.S. reports. Florida was second with 43. Texas had 41. Pennsylvania turned in 24. Washington State had 22. New York, 21. Michigan had 18. Ohio, Oregon, North Carolina each had 17 reports each. Georgia had 14. Nevada and New Mexico had 12 each. And Oklahoma, Illinois, Kentucky, and Missouri had 10 reports each. And the rest of the states turned in 9 or less reports for the month of January. And again, big thanks to Colorado MUFON for the citing statistics, and to Jan C. Harzan, the director for MUFON, for putting this information out there so that their affiliates all across the country can carry this stuff, and so we can report it to you. It's great information to provide. You know, it's not, again, it's not scientific. It's not really validating anything out there. A lot of these reports are investigated and come back either historical reports, meaning they happened months or years ago, but they are included in the actual reports for that particular month. And a lot of these are investigated and come back as essentially false positive information, meaning that they were either a star, they were a logical thing, or somebody was really, really drunk and saw something that really wasn't there. And with MUFON, they have field investigators in each state, and they go out and they investigate these reports in a varying degree. Sometimes they'll just call and follow up, or they'll actually visit, schedule a visit, and go out and interview somebody face-to-face. Depends on how big of a case it actually is. But it is a decent gauge. And again, California taking the big spot, or taking the number one spot with 65. It's not really that big of a deal, because when you look at it per capita, it's probably a lot smaller than some of these other states. And Florida has a decent population, as does New York. So those states usually pop up in the top five every single month with that. And again, that's not a big deal, because it's when you look at it per capita, which MUFON used to report the per capita reports, which to me gives you a better glimpse of how many reports per 100,000 people. So you kind of get an idea if there is something going on. But again, some of these are historical cases. And hopefully I'll be able to continue to provide this information to you on a weekly basis, or should I say weekly, monthly basis, so we can keep track of these. I still have the stats here for 2015, and we'll reflect back. Hopefully if I get the February reports, we can look back at February as well and kind of bounce those numbers around and see if they're going up or down. I guarantee you this year the reports will actually be less than last year, because Hangar 1 probably isn't going to get that much traction in the media as it did last year. It's a very popular show. A lot of those guys, I think John Ventry is really touring that much this year versus last year. He was all over the place at all kinds of events talking about Hangar 1 and helping that show get some traction with the media. So with that being said, I want to remind you that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting out of Youngstown, New York, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And also remind you that after the show, you can take a little bit of a siesta, a little bit of a break. Well, don't fall asleep, but, you know, just rest. And get ready for 2 hours of an awesome show. Tonight, Frank Lee talks with Linda Godfrey, author of 16 books, investigator, researcher of werewolves, dogmen, and other strange creatures and related phenomena. I'm going to force myself to stay up. I got some yellow here at my side. I'm going to drink some tea to keep myself awake to listen to this. It's going to be an exciting show tonight. Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host Frank Lee, every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Hawaiian time. And it's a good show. And speaking of paranormalities and ponderings, next week, February 16th, I'll be returning. I feel so special to be on the show twice in a month. It's awesome. But we had intended to talk about how to properly apply science to paranormal research, how to validate data, and how to debunk hoaxes. But Frank and I had a little politicking to do, and we let our emotions guide the show, which sometimes that's awesome, and we had a lot of fun doing it, and we may do it again next week, I don't know. We may cover these topics a little bit more in detail, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. We're going to be bringing you some really good information, but again, that's next week. But don't forget to tune in tonight to listen to Linda Godfrey. It's going to be a great show, lots of knowledge on that show. So, where are we at with the news? Well, we covered UFO news. And just a reminder, too, if you're listening in on this on an archive, I appreciate it. There are many ways to listen to the show. Obviously, live is the preferred method. Anything and everything can happen on the show, and it has, and it always will. It's fun. Live radio is awesome. It keeps you on your toes. And we also have a chat room going on. Dita's in control of that, so don't mess with her. She'll put you in your place real quick. No, she's not mean. It's fun. Everyone has fun talking about all kinds of subjects, and it's a good time in there. And I'll post links in there as I get them. And some of these links are not the ones that you're reading on The Anomalist, Unexplained Mysteries, or all these other paranormal websites, because I don't look just at those. I dig into other things. So I share some stuff that I don't normally put out, or always put out, I should say, on social media. I don't like to inundate people with too many posts. I post maybe once a day through social media. And again, you can find the Paranormal News Insider on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, you know, the usual suspects, as I say, every week. Usually Paranews Insider. And you can follow some of the things that's going on with some of the stories. Sometimes I'll post a blog post and let you know where that's at or what's going on with that, as well as news and information for the show and things that I'll be involved in as well. But as far as listening in on the archives of the show is uploaded immediately to Mixcloud pretty much right after the show is over. So you can download the Mixcloud app or check out Mixcloud on your computer and dig into that. And if you download that, all you do is look up WCJV, click on users, and follow WCJV-DB on there, and you can get my podcast, and you can also listen to all the other awesome shows, Frank Lee's Paranormalities and Ponderings, Paranormal Experienced, Blackthorn Path, all kinds of great shows that are all throughout the week here on WCJV. Great stuff here. Now, you can also, as far as my show is concerned, Podbean. I upload all my stuff to Podbean, and you can download a Podbean app from Google Play or the App Store and get these shows as I upload them, which I usually do sometime Wednesday afternoon, unless I'm off on Wednesdays. It'll be a little earlier Wednesday morning. It'll automatically be delivered right to your phone. You'll know that that episode has been uploaded, and you can listen to it right away. And I appreciate that. If you're listening in on an archive anywhere, also through, I mentioned the App Store, it's also on iTunes, so you can listen that way as well. So, that being said, let's jump into ghost news. Yes, there is some ghost news this week. Kind of a sad story. It's actually a follow-up to the November 24th episode, episode number 241, if you're looking for that archive. My goodness, did I do a ton of research for this story back in November. When I read it, it was confusing. It was weird. And two links that were used in the paranormal blog or paranormal news things were a little conflicting with some of the information, because one news outlet kind of reported haphazardly. They didn't really do their research. And another one kind of corrected the other one in a manner of speaking. So I wasn't sure who was telling the truth. So I had to dig into the story. And it was probably like a 15-minute segment when I talked about it back in November. But it was really weird, really complicated. And it's about a man who lost more than $500,000 to a psychic. Sounds crazy, but you know what? It does happen. Maybe not that much money, but it happens. Now, the psychic in question, Kelly Del Naro, left court last Tuesday after serving 8 months in jail. And she's now on 4 years probation as part of her plea agreement. Neil Rice had contacted the psychic after dumping money on another psychic that he felt was not genuine. He was attempting to use the psychic to get back with a woman he had met online. Well, not online. He met while in rehab. Great place to meet. You know, if you want to meet the love of your life, rehab, that's the place to do it. Not really. I'm not giving love advice here. Miss Del Naro promised to bring him and Michelle together with the help of special crystals, a time machine, and an 80-mile bridge made of gold. Now, you can't make that up. This is directly from the story. It's crazy. All of which, the special crystals, time machine, and 80-mile bridge made of gold would be brought through payments supplied by Mr. Rice. I don't think he made that much money make a bridge of gold, but at one point in the story, he found out that Michelle, the woman he had loved, although she broke up with him, technically a kind of a mutual agreement, but she initiated it, he found out that she had passed away from an apparent drug overdose. While that might have seemed like the end of the story, Del Naro still swindled more money out of Mr. Rice by telling him that there was another woman that she could reincarnate his lost love soul inside of. Again, I can't make this stuff up. This is like beyond anything the Lifetime Network can put on here. Del Naro had told Rice that she had spent all of her time and money to help him, which further fueled his spending efforts towards her. But the biggest kind of downfall here was Mr. Rice, which actually led to a lack of restitution. So this guy got no money back from all this stuff, was the fact that he ended up having a brief sexual relationship with Miss Del Naro. Oops. Well, between the two psychics, Mr. Rice paid a total of $713,975, and I'm sure there's some change in there somewhere. That's a lot of money. And you may think, this guy's an idiot. What was he thinking? But, you know, unless you've been desperate to be reacquainted with somebody that you care for or whatever and think you have a way through a person or a person tells you, you know, you do make an easy mark. And some psychics who do want to get a lot of money will say and do anything. Put you in all kinds of positions to make you feel guilty, to give you false hope, to crazy things like time machines, I guess, and 80-mile bridges. I don't know how he felt for that one, but I guess that was a pretty convincing conversation. And unfortunately, you know, I do know people that have fallen prey to psychics and spent quite a bit of money on them, in the thousands of dollars. And they felt the same way. They felt stupid. They felt like, how could I fall for such a scam? It sounds so simple when you're on the outside. But when you're involved, it's a completely different story. And it's unfortunate that there are people out there that are con artists and do gain confidence. That's where con comes from. Confidence of somebody else that they can provide these types of things and end up taking their money. Now, Mr. Rice now plans to start a website that hopes to help expose psychic scams. Well, good luck with that. They've been going on for hundreds of years now. And that's it for ghost news. Now, other news, talking about Edgar Mitchell, big news story here in the paranormal this week. Probably the biggest story in the paranormal news this week is Edgar Mitchell's passing. Now, you may wonder, what's all the fuss? You know, he was a, you know, an astronaut. He was one of 12 people to be on the moon. But what's the big deal? He was the sixth man to walk on the moon and did so on February 5th, 1971. Just one day shy of 45 years later, he died in his sleep on Thursday, February 4th, 2016, at age 85. So why is the paranormal world so saddened by his loss? Well, the big thing you've noticed or heard is that Mitchell was a huge believer in the UFO phenomena and that they are piloted by extraterrestrials, even though he has never claimed to have actually seen one. He's also been very vocal that he feels that the government is covering up their knowledge of UFOs and alien visitations. Mitchell has also commented that he felt Roswell was real and was also a cover-up, as aliens were interested in the progress of nuclear testing being done at White Sands Proving Ground, which was close to Roswell, New Mexico. So so was Edgar Mitchell just a nutty UFO believer that just happened to be an astronaut? Well, there's more to the story. On his way home from the 1971 Apollo 14 moon landing, Mitchell conducted a private ESP test that was carried out with variations of Zener cards. The experiment was unauthorized by NASA, and the timing of those attempting to guess his selections was a little bit off. And the science behind the experiment was shaky at best. It really was not a very well-executed experiment. It was well thought through for, you know, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to be launching into space and be one of the first few people to walk on the moon and do something major like that, I'm not going to be thinking about doing private, unauthorized tests on the side. But that's how important it was to him. And the experiment was actually published in the Journal of Parapsychology on June 1st, 1971, in Volume 35, Number 2. In 1973, Mitchell founded the Institute of Noetic Science, which still exists, and strives to explore consciousness in varying capacities. Now, Mitchell felt a profound state of awareness when returning home from his lunar journey, stating, quote, "The presence of divinity became almost palpable, and I knew that life in the universe was not just an accident based on random processes. The knowledge came to me directly," unquote. It was this feeling that drove him to found the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which now includes Dean Radin as their chief scientist, with others such as Rupert Sheldrake assisting with research. According to Space.com, Mitchell's passing now leaves only 7 of the 12 Apollo astronauts who walked on the moon still living. And now we get to some really sad news, some creepy and some scary news, all rolled into one. You might have heard this one in the news, that a strange incident took place Saturday, February 6th, in the state of Tamil Nadu in India. An object purportedly fell from the sky over an engineering school, landed on the ground, and exploded on impact. That explosion blew out windows on buses, injured 2 gardeners and a student, and sadly killed a 40-year-old bus driver. Now, it's believed that this was a meteorite blast, and a 2-foot crater was found at the center of the blast site, and fragments of debris were collected and thought to be either from a meteorite or actually from space junk. But from what I've read and seen, it looks like it's leaning more towards a meteorite. The debris has been sent out to be analyzed by scientists from the Indian Institute of Astrophysics. Now, the big deal about this, other than somebody being killed, is that if this is in fact a piece of meteorite, it is believed to be the first known fatality caused by one. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a big person on fear-mongering and getting scared or, you know, weirded out by anything, but, you know, I'm seeing a lot of weird things going on with these meteorites. And I reported how NASA is reporting a very large influx of sightings of fireballs in the sky. It's insurmountable, the percentage of increase that these things are being seen in the skies. And also on Saturday, February 6th, the same day as this accident or incident in India, at 10:08 p.m. local time, a large meteorite was also seen over the skies going from Poland to Sweden. A bright flash and series of booms alarmed many in the region, and large pieces of debris were found about 100 miles west of Copenhagen. What is going on in the skies? I mean, more and more of these fireballs were being reported, and now somebody being killed. It's a little nerve-wracking. And big thanks to Frank to add to my paranoia. He posted a story this afternoon on one of his sites, social media sites, through Paranormalities and Ponderings, about the NASA flyby of a small asteroid. I kind of ignored this. I saw this, I think, yesterday, the day before. I saw a little news blurb, and I just kind of ignored it because I'm tired of, you know, everyone freaking off every little asteroid. But I read this story, and I thought, you know, this is a little scary here. I mean, what if this is the one that crashes here? What if this is the one that probably won't take us out, but, you know, if this thing lands, it could be pretty major here. And I wanted to read what they had to say. And NASA has announced a flyby of this small asteroid, which will be occurring on March 5th. The asteroid goes by the name of 2013 TX-68. Sounds like a calculator. It was discovered on October 6, 2013, and flew by Earth 2 years ago, and was about 1.3 million miles away. Now, that sounds close, if you're astronomically speaking, but obviously 1.3 million miles is a pretty far distance. But when you're talking about solar system size, it's pretty close. It's decently close. Now, this year, on March 5th, it will be anywhere from 9 million miles to 11,000 miles. It's quite the discrepancy, I think. I mean, that's kind of a wide-open range, and it's crazy to think that they can't really calculate this. But this variation is due to the limited time of study of the object, as well as the many variations it could take with its trajectory in the next couple of weeks leading up to the sighting. NASA's Center for Near-Earth Objects states that there is no threat of collision with the estimated 100-foot-wide asteroid. And I've heard estimates anywhere from 65 to 175 feet wide, but they're going with 100 foot. Okay, nice solid number right there in the middle. Good job, guys. Now, what kind of damage would this asteroid do if it did collide with Earth? That's the question. Well, it could have the potential to cause a lot of damage and potentially kill many people if it entered the atmosphere over the right spot. Now, the Wikipedia page for 2013 TX-68 states, quote, it would likely create a large fireball in the sky and possibly an impact crater 328 to 1,886 feet across, assuming an impact angle of less than 45 degrees, unquote. Now, the story I just mentioned before that killed one person in India had a crater of 2 feet across. Again, it landed in India, which is a very populated country. And for even more reference, I don't know if you remember this, but the meteor that broke up over the skies in Chelyabinsk, I should say, Russia, 3 years ago, huge thing, was viral. The videos are awesome. That one was 65 feet across, well, estimated at 65 feet across. And I highly recommend watching the video. I got a link that I'll throw in the chat room here in a second, and I'll post it on social media probably tonight, tomorrow. Whenever, when you watch this video, wear headphones and turn up the volume, not all the way, but a good, decent amount. When it hits, it's loud. Now, it was so loud it blew out windows and damaged over 7,200 buildings, injured almost 1,500 people. Now, the injuries mostly were from secondary blast effects, glass, falling debris, people tripping over things because they're staring at the sky trying to film with their little phones. But some people reported flash blindness. They couldn't see. They were temporarily blinded by the flash. It was so bright. And this happened in the middle of the day, and it was so bright it was brighter than the sun. It caused the sun to look dull. And you can see this in the videos. Russia's cool because everybody has a dash cam for insurance purposes in their cars and trucks. So this leads to a lot of cool videos anytime there's a large meteorite like this falling. And people even had sunburn from this event. Crazy. And from Wikipedia's entry on the Chelyabinsk meteor event, quote, the bulk of the object's energy was absorbed by the atmosphere with a total kinetic energy before atmospheric impact equivalent to approximately 500 kilotons of TNT. Now, how much is that? Well, that's 20 to 30 times more energy than was released from the atomic bomb detonated at Hiroshima, unquote. And also, for the record, Chelyabinsk meteor was not detected prior to its atmospheric entry. That should be a little nerve-wracking to think about, that all the damage it did, and it's only half the size of the one that we're talking about. And also, according to Wikipedia, quote, it was the largest known natural object to have entered Earth's atmosphere since the 1908 Tunguska event, which destroyed a wide, remote, forested area of Siberia. Anybody who's seen the X-Files knows about the Tunguska event. The Chelyabinsk meteor is also the only meteor confirmed to have resulted in a large number of injuries. Now, obviously, it didn't kill anybody from what was reported, but just think about that. Well, I sure hope to get the trajectory right on this latest sighting of 2013 TX-68. And this particular asteroid will revisit in 2017 with even less of a chance of impact. Now, what are the chances here? I'll throw some statistics out here. Now, there is a 1 in 260 million chance that the object could hit us on March 5th. That sounds pretty remote. And compare that to winning the Mega Millions, that's 1 in 176 million. So you have a better chance of winning a big lottery than we do having this asteroid coming down here and contacting Earth. Now, 1 in 112 million are the odds that you would have being killed by being crushed by a vending machine, which is not likely to happen. But there are your odds, 1 in 112 million, if you want to have trivia with somebody. 1 in 112 million of getting crushed by a vending machine. What a way to go. You also have a better chance of getting struck by lightning, which is 1 in a million, as well as dying in a plane crash, or from flesh-eating bacteria. Not how I want to go, either. And if you want to check out that video, it's like 10 minutes long, but it's cool. You see pretty much every video that was ever done. Every piece of film, I should say, that's been found on this asteroid condensed into one, and there's two or three that the sound just kind of comes out of nowhere. It's really cool. I listened to it. I've watched this, I don't know how many times, and that sound is just deafening. I cannot imagine how loud that had to have been to be there, you know, near that, underneath that blast. Now, I've got the book of the week. Now that I've scared everyone with asteroids and things falling from the sky, we're going to go back a little bit and talk about animal tracks. Spent a little bit of time talking about strange animal sightings, and I want to visit this book. It's called Animal Tracks and Signs, and it's by Ginny Johnson, spelled with a J-I-N-N-Y. Never seen that before in my life. But this book is actually a kid's book, and I did receive this as a Christmas present from my mother and father-in-law. Thank you, Peggy and Frank. Back in 2013. And like I mentioned, it's a kid's book, but it's a really good book. Animal Tracks and Signs. So this isn't just a book about animal tracks. It's about sign as well. And sign can include poop and other things that animals do in the woods when they're in the woods. And this book contains over 400 examples of tracks. Now, it covers all kinds of animals, mammals, amphibians, reptiles, birds, insects and other invertebrates. It even has some water animals that, like whales and dolphins, which is weird. They don't leave footprints, but they do leave sign. And you can identify certain animals you'll see more often in the ocean than others. This is a really good book for people to observe animal life, especially kids. But you know what? I found this a very interesting book as well, and it's come in handy quite a bit looking at the certain animals. Tracks and things. But one of the coolest things about this book is the fact that sprinkled throughout this book are life-size tracks. Now, the book is 8.5 by 11. The rare print takes up the entire page. It's pretty cool. And some of the cat-like prints, including, I think the, I want to say, not sure if the, Some of the cat-like things are full size, and you can see whether or not they have claws, and whether they do or don't. But they also talk about some of the other things that animals do, and they do show quite a few pictures. There's some elephant dung here, and all kinds of other droppings. You can look at seasonal droppings as well. Some animals eat different things during different times of the year and leave different types of droppings. So there's a bit of the front cover of the book. It's a hardcover book, and it's real cheap online. I hate to tell you how much my mother-in-law paid for this book, according to the cover, but you can get it pretty cheap now. The book came out in 2008, but it's an awesome book. Even if you're not really getting into cryptozoology, but you want to learn more about animals, and you want to learn to be able to track animals as well as identify prints, I highly recommend this book. And again, you can see prints that are life size, the actual size. Some of them obviously aren't life size, but it's a really good book. And even though it's made for kids, it's I found some stuff that I didn't know, and it reminded me of certain things that I'd forgotten about, like the cheetah having claws. It also shows like what bats would look like if bats were crawling on the ground. Really interesting stuff. A lot of pictures. Not a whole lot of written content, because, again, it's written for kids. But this is, I would say this is a really good introductory, you know, get into reading sign and reading tracks. This is a good starter book. It's a good book to use as a reference. It's not the kind of thing you want to take out of the field with you. You're not going to be able to haul this around unless you go camping and put it in your car. But you're not going to put this in a backpack, a day pack, or anything like that to carry around. I always recommend that you get the paper things and carry them out in the woods and look at these. But a book like this is a great primer to learn about these tracks, learn about the sign, and learn about these things before you go out there into the woods. And usually a lot of the fold-up field guides are geared towards North American animals. So you're not going to get a lot of the potential sightings of cryptids. Certain monkeys and things are sighted. You know, just talking here in Ohio, we've had all kinds of sightings of monkeys, of kangaroo. We've had different kinds of cats, large cats sighted, that won't really be in your normal book, you know, your normal fold-up paper field guide of North American animals. You'll find bobcats, maybe a cougar, lynx, things like that. But you're not going to find some of the other large cats that have a little bit different varying prints that you may need to have if you're going to go out into the woods and you're going to look for these cryptids based on reports. So I'd recommend a book like this one, Animal Tracks and Sign by Ginny Johnson, to look for different kinds of animals that, again, are not on your field guides, because, you know, those are great, again, to take out in the field. But, you know, what about these other animals? And it also gives you a glance to look at the varying types of tracks. Now, it's interesting to know how similar some tracks are from different animals, and you can kind of compare and contrast. But the big thing here is, it's one thing to see a perfect specimen in a book, but it's a far different one to actually see one in the wild. So that's why I recommend, if you learn how to track animals and you learn how to follow them, you'll know exactly which one is actually leaving the print. You know, look at chipmunks, look at raccoons, look at skunk, just don't get too close. And look at how their footprints are, and so you definitely know what that particular animal was. And it'll give you the knowledge to continue to look for other creatures. And I always tell people, one of the biggest pieces of advice I give, I had a 13-year-old email me, I think it was last week, about how do I get into cryptozoology. And one of the things I told them was, know the regular animals that are out there. It should go without saying, in any kind of anomalous field, whether it's ghosts, UFOs, or anything in cryptozoology, if you don't know what's normal, how do you know what's not normal, or therefore also paranormal? If you can't identify animals that are in your own backyard, how do you expect to go out there and identify a cougar or a mountain lions or any kind of other large creature running around? If you got a cheetah in your backyard, how are you going to identify that from house cats? Well, that's what you do. You have to go out there and look at these kinds of things and compare and contrast and get used to seeing these things out there in the wild. So you get that knowledge and seeing these prints that are actually there versus, again, the perfect little prints that you see in these books and things. It doesn't do it justice, but it's a good primer to get used to them. And as you've seen, if you look at the prints from the New South Wales incidents, especially the one from 1992. It's a little confusing to look at because there's, you know, dirt and other debris, and it's not a perfect cast. So it's very difficult, unless you really know what caused it, where you have multiple tracks and multiple photographs to go on. It's very hard to discern that. And if you're ever going to take pictures of a cast, of a print, or anything, always use something for scale. Don't just hold it up in the picture. Use a measuring tape or ruler, or you know, anything else that is common knowledge of size for scale. Because, you know, some people have small hands, some people have big hands. It's kind of hard to tell how big some of those prints are. So, that is it. An hour has gone by already. And I want to thank everybody who showed up in the chat room tonight. Cindy, my producer, Dita, for patrolling the message board in there. And anybody who's listening in on the archives, I appreciate it. makes me want to continue to do this every week, week in, week out, and makes all the research worthwhile when I see that people are downloading this podcast and listening in. And again, I really appreciate it. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it, and it's a lot of fun for me to provide this information to you each and every Tuesday night here on WCJV. So with that being said, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.